Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening today. Did you know that WNYC now has an iPhone and iPad app? It's free and it's really cool, really easy to listen to the station live and to listen to past segments on demand. I was messing with it over the weekend and discovered that you can even set an alarm on this app so that it starts itself up at whatever time you choose, say weekdays at 10 a.m., just as a random example. So download the free WNYC mobile app from the iTunes App Store. Well, 9 + 9 + 9 = x. What is the value of x? I try not to make you do algebra before noon, really. But today we're going to, because 9 + 9 + 9 seems to equal 1, because Herman Cain is number 1 now in the Republican presidential polls with his 999 tax reform plan. So take out your calculators and we'll see what 999 would add up to for you and for the country. We will do some sample incomes and types of incomes and see how your tax bill might change with our guest, Richard Rubin, tax policy reporter for Bloomberg News. Richard, thanks for coming on. Hi.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Now, I want to begin with the candidate making the case a little bit in his own words. Remember, 999 is for a 9% personal income tax, regardless of your income, a 9% corporate tax, and a 9% national sales tax. So here's an exchange from Meet the Press yesterday that begins after the host, David Gregory, asked Cain about economists who say 999 would hurt the poor and middle class by adding a sales tax on top of their income tax. Cain's response?
First, they are missing one very critical point about the sales tax. It wasn't even mentioned in that analysis that you read. On the price of goods, there are invisible taxes that are built into everything we buy. We're simply, those invisible taxes are going to go away. And we're replacing it with a 9% visible tax. For example, take a loaf of bread. The farmer pays taxes on his profits. The company that makes the flour, the baker, the delivery man. By the time that loaf of bread gets to the grocery store, there are a series of invisible taxes, which are also called embedded taxes. So in reality, those taxes go away, and so the price of goods don't go up.
You're saying they actually go down?
Yes, they actually go down.
Based on what?
Based upon competition. Competition drives prices down. For example, suppose one bread maker says, I'm going to charge $2.20 for a loaf of bread, and the other one says he's going to charge $2.40 for a loaf of bread. Well, guess which one is going to win out based upon the quality of being essentially the same.
My question had to do, however, with the reality of this plan. Mm-hmm. The wealthiest Americans would pay less, the poorest Americans and middle class would pay more. You don't dispute that?
I do dispute that. You and others are making assumptions about what wealthy Americans will do with their money, and you're making assumptions about what the middle class and the poor. You can't predict the behavior. If wealthy Americans...
This isn't about behavior, Mr. Cain. This is about whether you pay... If you don't pay taxes now, and you now have income tax and a sales tax, you pay more in taxes.
More people will pay less in taxes. More people will pay less in taxes.
Mr. Cain, we talked to independent analysts ourselves.
Yes.
We're not just reading newspaper clips here.
Understand.
They tell us they've looked at this based on what's available of the plan, and it's incontrovertible. There are people who will pay more.
That's right. Some people will pay more, but most people will pay less is my argument.
Who will pay more?
Who will pay more? The people who spend more money on new goods. The sales tax only applies to people who buy new goods, not used goods. That's a big difference that doesn't come out.
All right. So there's about a 2-minute excerpt from Meet the Press yesterday. Herman Cain, his first ever appearance on that show, with the host David Gregory as a starting point for our look at the 999 plan. Who would pay more? Who would pay less? Would this really be revenue neutral? And why would a Republican candidate propose a revenue neutral tax reform anyway? And if you want to get in on this, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, with Richard Rubin, tax policy reporter for Bloomberg News. So, Richard, what they were going around on in that clip is whether this would almost necessarily be bad for those people making up to about, say, $45,000 a year, who often pay no income tax right now. If there was a 9% flat income tax that they were no longer exempt from, plus a 9% national sales tax, David Gregory's point was, it seems incontrovertible that the people at the, in the lower middle class and even poor are going to pay more in taxes. Is that incontrovertible among economists who you've been reporting on?
Yes. There's what the plan does is shift the sort of burden of taxation from income toward consumption. So what that means is that people who tend to spend or consume a greater percentage of their income, which tends to be people in the lower and lower middle class, would face a higher tax burden than they face now.
It would eliminate the payroll tax, however,
sure.
Herman Cain argues, which is the regressive tax that we have that's specifically for Social Security and Medicare. Everybody pays that up to about $100,000 of income. So how does that affect the equation?
Well, what I think a lot of people miss about the business tax that's part of this, right? There's the 9% individual tax. People kind of understand that. There's the 9% sales tax, and we all know sales taxes, so we're all familiar with that. But the 9% business tax is not at all like the corporate income tax we have now. The current corporate income tax with a top rate of 35% is a tax on corporate profits. So that's profits made by a corporation. Partnerships don't pay that, and sole proprietorships don't pay that. The way the business tax in the 999 plan works is it's essentially like a European value-added tax. So what that means is wages are not deductible, so businesses, you know, pay taxes based on their sales minus their sort of business inputs. In his example, the flour mill pays taxes based on, you know, what it sells the bread, the milled flour for, minus what it paid for the wheat, but it doesn't deduct the cost of wages. And so when you don't deduct the cost of wages, that means it's essentially the same thing as a payroll tax. And then the sales tax is, it's a payroll tax in the sense that it's a tax on consumption,
right?
And people in the lower middle, most people tend to consume all of their income every year. A lot of people consume all their income every year.
So do you think it would be an impediment to job creation because suddenly businesses wouldn't be able to deduct wages as a business expense?
It's hard to know. It's a really one of the things, he talks about what happened to prices. It's also unclear what would happen to wages, what would happen to profits. There he's right. There are embedded taxes in the cost of goods that we already have. There are also embedded taxes in wages, and they're and taxes affect profits. So it's far from clear if you went to this kind of system how those embedded taxes would get unembedded. Would they end up showing up in lower prices? Would they end up in higher wages? Would they end up in higher profits?
At the end of the Meet the Press clip that we played, Cain made a point of saying that he would exempt used goods from the sales tax. Mm-hmm. It would only apply to new items. Why would that be a big deal?
It's a big deal. It certainly, if it provides a way for people to not be burdened by the sales tax.
Poorer people would buy used cars, for example.
Sure, used cars, used furniture. One of the things that's important to remember, though, is that
of course, you can't buy used hamburgers or used rent.
Right, exactly. And now, one of the things that, they've not made it entirely clear exactly what the sales tax base is, but you've got to have a pretty broad base, including things exactly like rent, medical insurance, things that we're not used to paying sales tax on right now that would be affected here. So, he's right that, that there are used goods that you'd be able to purchase to not have to pay the sales tax. But the other point, too, is that the business tax is not at all the same thing. The business tax, we have to look at how it works when they provide more detail than they've provided.
Richard Rubin, tax policy reporter for Bloomberg News, helping us understand Herman Cain's 999 tax reform plan. 212-433-WNYC. Tim in Hillsborough, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. I don't think that this is a bad idea, and I think that everybody should be paying their share. When you have people who make less than $50,000 a year not paying any taxes, that's a burden on the rest of us and the rest of the system. But I don't think that the 9% is going to generate enough income. I would have to see 10 economists locked in a room for a month to figure this out.
That is a really scary thought.
Because if you're going to eliminate all these other taxes that we pay, and there's a lot of hidden taxes. When we buy tires, we pay a federal tax. When you pay your bill for your cell phone, you pay a tax to the federal government for that.
Right.
Are all those other taxes going to go away?
And how
about? I don't think it's going to generate enough money.
And I know you told our screener that you wanted to mention property taxes, which is the eternal New Jersey obsession, and for good reason. And so, Richard Rubin, what about that? You know, Cain sounds comprehensive when he says, well, I'd reform the income tax, the corporate tax, and the national sales tax. He'd add a national sales tax. Does he ever mention property taxes?
No, because there is no federal property tax. So,
right.
So he wouldn't touch any of the state and local taxes that are out there, either on sales, property, or income, or corporate income. He also is not proposing to get rid of some of the taxes that that the caller mentioned, the federal excise taxes on things like telephone bills, alcohol, cigarettes.
Right.
Those wouldn't go away in his plan. He would get rid of
so those
payroll,
are, in a way, sales taxes on top of sales taxes. The other question that the caller raises is about whether it raises enough money. And Cain says his plan is revenue neutral. I know that's in dispute, but if it is revenue neutral, if he is selling it as revenue neutral and not a tax cut, why would conservatives care about it?
Well, a couple things. It is, it's close to revenue neutral. We can get into more detail about the assumptions that they use to get there, if you want. Well, why conservatives might support it? It removes the taxes on capital income, so capital gains wouldn't be taxed, dividends wouldn't be taxed, and so there's a lot of conservatives who say that that there's sort of a double tax on through capital gains and dividends and estate taxes. So that's what's really appealing to conservatives. And the idea of a broad base and lower rates is also appealing to conservatives.
Joe in Paramus, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. I feel this is all of a hunk of BS because as an economist, I can tell you, I can come up with a plan called 10-10-10. It's all about catchiness. This is something like sounds very good, but on substance, it's going to add $3 trillion more to the deficit because obviously now you're going to tell the rich who don't pay the taxes anyway that the rest of us are paying 9%, and the rich are going to pay minus 9% and get more, get more money back from the treasury. So all in all, it's going to add $3 trillion more in deficit financing, and the government ultimately will have to end up printing more money.
Joe, thank you. And I guess that's the revenue neutral question.
Right. And so what they've done is the Cain campaign has done a rough analysis and of the plan. And it shows up that if you keep the excise taxes and other federal revenue, you can use 999 to get about what the government collected in 2008, if you kind of look at economic data from that year and tax revenue from that year. There's a couple issues with that. One is that their assumption is that there's about 95% compliance, and right now we're at about 83 to 85%, and that's a big gap. Second, their numbers actually come out, when you look at their spreadsheets, in 9.1, 9.1, 9.1, which is not quite as catchy. And then third, Cain says he would, balance the budget in the first year. So that essentially means because the budget's out of balance now, that all the burden of that would come from the spending side. So, it is revenue neutral in terms of getting roughly as much money as the government has been collecting in recent years. There's a lot of people who would say that the government hasn't been collecting enough.
Before we run out of time, I want to point everybody to an explainer on our politics website about the 999 tax plan that has a great pie chart. It's not just any pie chart. It's a pizza pie chart. And so you can see that the pepperoni part of the pie is the amount that would come from individual income taxes. The mushroom part of the pie is from the corporate tax, and the plain part is from the national sales tax. I guess that's because if you don't ask for any toppings, then you'll pay less sales tax. But you can see our Herman Cain 999 plan pizza pie chart at itsafreecountry.org. Just in our last minute, let's run down a couple of rough national average incomes or typical sample incomes and tell me if you think it's been these numbers have been crunched sufficiently to give definitive answers. The national average income is just under $50,000 a year. Let's say you were making $50,000 a year and spending the way a typical family making $50,000 a year spends. Would you pay more, less, or the same total federal tax at the end of the year?
You'd have to know more, but let's put it this way. A family of four, a married couple with two kids, because of the child tax credits and standard deductions and exemptions, at that income level would pay relatively little in federal income tax. So it would be mostly the payroll tax, which both employer and employee side gets you, but it's about 15%. So my rough guess would be that a family in that income group, if they're spending all their money, which most are in that, or much of their money, which most are in mm-hmm. that group, would end up paying more. And we're expecting, hopefully we'll see some analysis of this in more detail in the next week or so.
$100,000 a
year? There it really starts depending. It depends how much they have invested. It depends whether they're, where the money comes from. Are they running a business? Are they just wage earners? That's where, when you get outside the sort of straight up and down wage earners, it gets a little trickier to figure out exactly where someone would land.
$1 million a year?
Again, it depends. If $1 million a year, it depends what your if your money is coming from capital gains, which would go from 15% under the current system to zero. It depends whether you're spending all that $1 million in the year. So,
there's
a lot of things where it. But in general, I think every economist we've talked to said that people at the top end of the income scale would do better than people at the bottom
end.
And
the hope, I guess, is that those million-dollar earners invest more money in things that ultimately create jobs. By the way, have you ever seen the SimCity 999 plan?
I saw mentioned this last week. I have not played, and I think I played it in the pre-999 era.
We're going to have to do a follow-up on this later in the week and figure out, did Herman Cain take his plan from SimCity 4, which has a 999 tax plan. So we will see later in the week how similar they actually are. Richard Rubin, tax policy reporter for Bloomberg News. Very informative. We really appreciate it. I think a lot of our listeners now understand more. Whether they like it more or less or the same, is up to them. But now I think we all understand a little bit more about what the 999 Herman Cain tax reform plan is. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next. Brookhauser surveys teens from around the world who've landed in New York City at the International High School in Brooklyn. Stay with us.